Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. When President Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation in 1863, African Americans owned less than 1% of the total wealth in the United States. 154 years later, that number has barely changed. White families have 13 times the net wealth held by black families. That's according to the Survey of Consumer Finances in 2013. One proposal for fixing this huge wealth gap? Black-owned banks. By investing in them, African Americans keep money within their own community. And the idea goes back centuries. Mirza Baradaran is Associate Professor of Law at the University of Georgia. Her new book is The Color of Money, Black Banks and the Racial Wealth Gap. In the book, she explores the wealth gap and the dilemmas of black banking, back to the Freedmen's Bank created after the Civil War.
The Freedmen's Bank was the only sort of relic of Reconstruction era reformers' efforts to help the freed slaves that survived to get some, you know, capital, some stake in the land that they had been working for centuries. And it was the only bank ever created by Congress for private citizens. And it was created as a savings bank so that freed slaves, you know, they weren't going to get land, but they would get a savings bank and they could deposit money in there and buy land. And so it seemed that it would be supported by the full faith and credit of the government and that it would be backed by the Treasury. It was not. The bank failed disastrously. It wiped out 60% of the freed slave savings.
Well, how long was it then before there was another real effort to form black banks and to consolidate black capital?
Yeah, so it was decades later. I mean, it was funny, right? There was this dual effect of the Freedmen's Bank. One is that there's this lack of trust of banking institutions, but the other is propaganda efforts of the Freedmen's Bank really impressed upon the black population that banking and savings accounts was the way to wealth. It's decades later, black communities across the South are saying, we need our own banks. Jim Crow segregation was rampant. Blacks could not invest in white institutions, and so we're going to create our own. And these banks were, you know, quite successful and robust and led to this, you know, heyday of black banking between 1910 and 1930. So during this era, there were hundreds of black banks formed all across the country in these segregated black communities. And so this was the height of segregation, and it was also the height of black banking and a real renaissance in community building in these black spaces.
Well, those banks were so successful amid the injustice of segregation. Why didn't they flourish past the 1930s?
Because you can't seclude people and bar them from real sort of the actual sort of mainstream arteries of capital. It just doesn't work. So they were successful in drawing in deposits, but they were never able to do the magic of banking. And so the mechanism was broken because of segregation, because of Jim Crow, and because of widespread exclusion from commerce.
Toward the end of the civil rights era, President Richard Nixon, Republican, was a big advocate of black banking as well, really tried to promote it, but he seemed to believe in it to an extent. Talk about Richard Nixon and how he viewed black banking.
Yeah, so Nixon it's a fascinating and ironic twist to this black banking saga, which is that his response to black power is black capitalism. And what Nixon meant by black capitalism is, okay, we're not going to integrate. We're not going to give reparations, which were what the black power groups were demanding. We're going to give you black capitalism. You are going to own the businesses of the ghetto, and you're going to just, you know, use the rules of capitalism to build wealth. And so he gives, you know, very weak, by the way, support to these black banks and black businesses in the ghetto. He puts, you know, some government deposits in these black banks. He does the SBA loans, which, you know, the Supreme Court finds later to be a discrimination to white firms. He starts affirmative action. So this is his whole bundle of black capitalism responses. There was no capital in black capitalism. There was no real state support of these industries. But the thing with black capitalism is that it was incredibly successful politically. And it also ends up leading to this sort of libertarian free market idea of, we're not going to help these communities. We're just going to allow them to compete in the free market. And what I point out in the book is actually that's only applied to black spaces, because the way that the other, you know, surrounding areas outside of the black ghetto had gained their wealth is through these government programs that had been ongoing from the New Deal until the 60s. And now that blacks were saying, okay, well, we want a part of this, you know, capital credit structure, Nixon said no, pointed to the free markets and sort of wished the communities luck.
Well, I want to talk about the state of black banking today, because it was just about a year ago, you know, we covered on this show the Bank Black movement, which took off on social media and elsewhere too. almost overnight with that movement, $1 million in new deposits in black banks. And since then, estimated $60 million into black banks because of the movement. Has it been a big success? And what does it say about the overall health of black banks today?
I mean, look, this is an industry that was decimated by the financial crisis. There were, you know, over 50 black banks before 2008. Now there are about 20. Most of them are still kind of limping along. This is not an industry that's robust. And part of it is because, you know, the way that banking works, you really need a strong capital base. And most of these banks serve a community that still suffers from concentrated poverty, is still 30 years, 40 years post-civil rights, is still segregated mainly. And so the mechanism of banking is not going to save these communities. I get the urge for bank black. You know, I deposit my money in a black-owned bank. I get that urge, and I think we need to be supporting these institutions because they're the only ones really committed to closing this wealth gap. But they can't be the only ones sitting in the room. They can't be the only ones doing it. There has been this, I think, myth that the problems of the black community are just problems of free markets, right? That they're, you know, low-wealth communities because of a lack of initiative by blacks. There's, you know, family values. There's all of this language that blames the lack of wealth on the black community itself. And if there's any myth that I want to dispel, it's that is not the cause. The cause of the wealth gap is structural policies that we have made through banking, through credit, through redlining, through Jim Crow and institutional racism that has created this wealth gap. And when it was time to pay attention to it, you know, in the late 60s and until now, a lot of times white policymakers responded with free market responses. This is how we've dealt with segregation in the ghetto and concentrated poverty is, oh, we'll give you this micro lending program. We'll give you a community bank. And this is not just Nixon. This is Reagan and Clinton and Obama and Trump. You know, every policymaker's response to, you know, these pockets of concentrated poverty is small banking. Yes, bank black for sure. But I just want for this time, you know, instead of just relying on black banks, that we all sort of wake up and say, this is not just their problem.
The book is The Color of Money, Black Banks and the Racial Wealth Gap. Mercer Baradaran is Associate Professor of Law at the University of Georgia. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.